You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we have got a very, very special episode today. I am talking with, this is features editor John Gentile, and I am talking with Flipper and Mike Watt, who is now part of Flipper, and here representing Flipper is Steve DePace. And before we get it, first of all, they're going on a UK tour, and if you live in the UK, you should go see this tour because it's Flipper with Mike Watt. It's going to be crazy good. I've seen Flipper three times. I saw them back in like 2007 at like the San Francisco Punk Rock Legend Festival or whatever it was called. I saw them at Punk Rock Bowling, and I saw them at the First Unitarian Church about 2 years ago. Flipper is amazing every time, but you people in the UK and Europe are especially lucky because you get to see Flipper with Mike Watt and Combo Style. That kicks off in late July in the UK. It runs through France, Italy, Germany, Austria, and it winds up in my favorite country of all, the Netherlands, in late August. So you all definitely should go see Flipper. And to entice you, here's Way of the World by Flipper. We'll be right back. And we are back. Steve, thanks for being on the Punk News Podcast. I really appreciate it.
Cool, man.
And Mike, always wonderful to have you on the Punk News Podcast again. Thanks for being on.
I first got to play with Flipper opening up for them 41 years ago in the city, 10th Street Hall.
Well, let's talk about that. Like, what are your guys' early remembrances of Flipper and Minutemen crossover? Or was it Flipper and Reactionaries?
Flipper to me was the definition of the punk movement, which meant let your freak flag fly. I just loved them. They had their own sound, their own way of bringing it. I was proud to be part of that component of the movement.
Steve, do you have any early...
Oh, go ahead. That's a good way to put it. Component of the movement. I like that.
Yeah.
I think we should get t-shirts.
That's the way punk was for us. Each group of cats had their own trip, but we were all on the same boat.
Right. That's very true. Well put.
Not to get off on a negative vibe, and we'll get back to Flipper briefly, but you guys bring up a great point, is a criticism I hear from a lot of first and second wave punk guys is they were like, back in our day in punk, we were all trying to be different from each other, but now it seems like a lot of the punk bands are all trying to be similar to each other. Do you guys feel that, or maybe you don't feel that, or maybe that's always been the case?
Well, I think that kind of started right around, I guess, 1980 and into the 80s with the hardcore movement. What Mike was referring to is the punk rock movement, in which like Mike said, man, every person, every band set out to be something unique and different. No one ever even thought about trying to sound like somebody else, right? That wasn't even in the punk rock ethos at all. But then when the hardcore movement came into vogue, the music style and the fashion style seemed to become something of a uniform, like everything, all the music. I mean, I love some of these bands that got, you know, some of these hardcore bands, but the style itself was that super fast, you know, real, as fast as you could play, you know, seemed to be the goal, you know? And so all the bands started sounding alike. And I think that carried on through the 90s and into the 2000s, and punk pop became a thing. And all of those bands just had to sound exactly the same. And so, yeah.
A lot of Marlon Blando.
Well, speaking of different things, is one of the things that I really like about modern Flipper is every time you see him, it's different. I saw you guys with Yao. I saw you guys in a different lineup at Punk Rock Bowling. And one of the things that I like is if you look at like jazz, like Miles Davis. On this record, it's Miles Davis and Cannonball Adderley. On this record, it's Miles Davis with John Coltrane or whatever. The jazz guys, of course, it's different every record or every tour. Is that one of the main goals as to why the Flipper lineup keeps evolving and changing, to keep things and the interactions, I guess, unique and spontaneous, like jazz or something like that? Or is it out of necessity?
It's out of necessity. It's circumstances. As circumstances present themselves, you have to be able to adapt in order to survive and continue on. So adaptability, that's something that goes to the human species, too. They say that... you know, whoever is able to adapt is able to survive. So we've been faced with certain situations with either, you know, people dying or people not able to do this or able to do that. And so we've had to, you know, take a look around and say, you know, okay, Will Shatter's not coming on this tour because for whatever reason. We got to look around and see who's available and how can we make this happen? You know, so we've had circumstances pop up where we reached out to Mike a couple of years ago Mike Watt. The bass player that was on board with us, Rachel, a longtime friend of ours. We've known her forever. We all used to be roommates together back in the 80s and stuff. So she was unable to come to Europe with us a couple of years ago because of circumstances. And, you know, we reached out to Mike and asked him if he'd like to come along and play bass with us. And he said yes. And it was just, and that was with David Yao on vocals. And that was a real super fun tour. It was amazing. I got to say, Mike Watt, of all the bass players I've ever played with, and I've played with, you know, in Flipper, we've had a handful of different bass players, four, five, six different bass players over the years. And Mike, everybody's unique and different, right? And I love playing with Mike, and I've said this to several people, like, Mike is the first bass player that I've ever played with that understands the dynamic between drums and bass. He understands and is vocal about it, that the drums and the bass need to be locked.
Yeah.
And no other bass player, every other bass player I've ever played with, they're in their own world. They're just doing their bass lines, their bass riffs, and they're just paying attention to themselves and, you know, generally how everything fits together. But no one has ever understood that dynamic that the drums and bass need to be really locked. That's the rhythm section, right?
Yeah.
So Mike, Mr. Watt, when we did that tour in Europe in 2019, I've never had a bass player want to stand right next to me, literally like an arm's reach from me, right? He's right by my hi-hat.
Yeah.
And he wanted to make sure, like, he would look at me before the song started, like, all right, let's lock in on this song, each and every song. And then after the song, if we were successful at it, I'd get a little fist bump from him, which was really cool.
Well, I did 120 months with Stooges. And that's what I learned. Stooges. And in a lot of ways, Stooges is like Flipper. And there's nothing like the bass and the drum coming together.
Right.
Just my experience. So I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah.
Rhythm section. Yeah. It's not a burden. It's an opportunity.
And that kind of, you know what, man? Something just hit me too. The way Ted Falcone, our guitar player, the way he describes our music, right? He calls it rhythm and noise, which I think is appropriate. It's, you know, I think that's a great way to describe it. So rhythm being the rhythm section with Mike Watt and myself on bass and drums, and then Ted Falcone being the noise factor, you know. He definitely creates the noise. That guy sounds like a freight train.
Texture.
Yeah.
Ted, the texture.
Yeah, there you go, man.
It's really, you know, to me, that's what it was about. Bands coming up with their own voice. And Flippers always had their own voice. So if I can get on board and aid and abet, it's success.
Yeah. And Mike Watt understands thoroughly. He goes back to, as he was talking about, you know, he harkens back to the early days of punk rock with all the various bands that Mike's been in. He was there from the start, you know.
I'm a true believer.
Yeah. And it's interesting. There were camaraderies that were built way back then, even between... There was between the LA scene and the San Francisco scene, there was some rivalry, definitely. But there were also camaraderie was also like among the real authentic players and the authentic bands, not the ones that were putting on a facade, but people who were really, like Mike just said, a believer, the true believers. We understood each other, recognized each other, became friends with each other. even though there was that kind of rivalry between LA and SF, you know, it was Ted and Keith Morris both tell a story about, I believe it was the first time Circle Jerks came to play in San Francisco. Several members, I was not involved myself, but I guess several members of each band got into a fist fight, and Ted and Keith were sitting down observing this fight happen between Flipper and Circle Jerks, right? Members of each of their own bands, right? And they were just kicking back together, hanging out, drinking a beer, watching the festivities, you know, like, yeah. So anyway,
yeah. Actually, the city had bigger scene than us. You can believe, yeah.
Were there more bands up in San Francisco than LA in the early days?
It was just bigger and just stronger, and we kind of looked up to the city. And you know, a lot of that stuff, like Sly Stone said, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah, you know, and
Sly
and then,
Stone
then,
with one of the,
he's from up there too, right?
Yeah, San Francisco boy. Absolutely. Yeah. You want to hear something crazy? My mother was his banker. My mother worked at Bank of America and took care of Sly Stone. Sylvester Stewart was his real name. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that, a lot of stuff, okay, you don't pick. But then other stuff you do pick. So that's when it's time to make up your mind and decide what's bullshit and what's happening. And when it comes to music, when it comes to being creative, let the freak flag fly. You know? And get rid of that little shit. Keep that little shit in the back seat. It's going to creep up, of course, but there's nothing more interesting, you know, than following your fucking trip and getting in with creative cats. You know,
That's real, you know, important.
This, yeah. And this tour is called Till the Wheels Fall Out, right? It's like, yep. It was not just a stage for us. This is what we do.
Yeah.
You know, Steve, what I mean? It's not a nostalgia act. It's not sentimentalism. This is what we do. And we're going to do it till the fucking wheels fall off.
well, actually, Mike brings up a great point. Steve, one of the things that I like about you, especially in your drumming, in that it's primal, it's kind of cold and hot, and it's calculated and it's fierce. It's grooving. One of the things I like about Mike is he's that this larger than life, indefatigable spirit that just is always on tour, having fun. I love playing Flipper. I love playing Stooges music. Steve, is Mike Watt the larger than life character that we see? Is that the real Mike Watt? Is that who you see when you guys are practicing?
I crack up when I see Mike, like when he plays with his own band, when he steps up to the microphone, right? And he's about to make it real for everybody, right? The last gig we played together, you know, Flipper in a different incarnation we played with Mike and his band, The Missing Men. We did a gig together. Mike steps up to the microphone and says, "Turn that disco shit off. We just got here from Pedro and we're going to play some punk rock." You know, I mean, he makes it real, like right out of the gate. You know, it's like, we're here. We ain't fucking around. Turn the disco shit off and let's rock. You know,
that was in Orange County.
Yeah, man, I love that shit.
Well, there you have it. You know, go ahead.
Hey, Mike, you cracked me up because you cite the mileage that you drove from San Pedro to wherever the gig is. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You cite the mileage. Are you going to do that in Europe and say, "Hey, man, we're 3,286 miles from Pedro"?
Well, Mike Vandy's going to be driving, so a little different. But I just want people to realize there's a reality behind the dealio on this shit. I wonder sometimes what people think about gigs and who's playing them. And is it just some like fucking cartoon show? These are real dudes. And myself and the Flipper guys, veteranos. But we're still here till the wheels fall off. You know what I mean? I would at least serve as an example of motherfuckers who won't give up.
Yeah, one or two of those wheels only got one lug nut left, too.
So if we're up there, let's bring on the next shift. You know, the younger cats, well, they got, you know, can they do a better song than The Way of the World? That's a beautiful fucking tune. Sacrifice? Well, write a bit better tune. Come on. Come on. Outdo us.
Well, there That's you go. Mike just cited Sacrifice, so let's play Sacrifice off the Flipper's second album, and we'll be back. And here's a crusher that has influenced the Melvins, Nirvana, pretty much anybody that played slow after like 1982. This track was a part of. So, Minuteman, there you go. So this is Sacrifice by Flipper. We'll be right back.
Can you hear the war cry?
And we are back. Steve and Mike, you guys are both huge influences on the Melvins, on Nirvana, on all these gigantic, gigantic bands, you know. What's it like to know that you all really influenced a huge chunk of popular music, but also, I guess, the cultural conversation? What does that mean to you? But also, should you guys get more props than you get? You know what I mean? Or maybe that's not a part of it. I mean, I think you guys should be in Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if that matters, you know, to people. I think you guys should be on the cover of, you know, Rolling Stone magazine or whatever, because you're some of the most influential musicians of all time. How does that feel?
It feels pretty great. I don't know how else to describe that.
I want to play as good as I can for Brother Steve and Dad. You know what I mean? The knowing is in the doing.
We didn't set out, you know, with that goal in mind or anything like that. It's like, you know, everybody just, like we said a few minutes ago, like all the bands from back in the late 70s, mid to late 70s that got started, you know, we saw punk rock, and I'm sure Mike would agree with this. We saw punk rock. I mean, everybody has said the same thing. We saw punk rock as something that was accessible. For me, as a, like, I don't know, what was I, 19 years old when I became aware of punk rock. Prior to that, it occurred to me that even though I wanted to be a drummer and I was playing drums and stuff, it's like, I could never, the bands I was listening to and the bands I was buying records for, you know, from the set, you know, all those bands in the, from the 60s and 70s that I grew up listening to, reaching the goal of being in a band like that seemed like it was unattainable to me. There was nothing at street level. That stuff was all way up above my head. And, so even bands I loved, you know, Led Zeppelin, the Stones, you know, all these different bands, right? I could fantasize about wanting to be a rock star, but I could never really, there was no step-by-step path to get there. But when punk rock presented itself, it was at street level. It was like you go into a club and the stage was only like 12 inches off the ground. The band and the audience, there was no separation. There was no barriers. And the music that was being played was doable. Like I could do that, you know? So it allowed us all to get into music and play, you know?
Same thing with us. Same thing with us. You understand, these were the days of arena rock. We didn't really know club rock.
Right. You know?
And how many bands started at an arena gig? How many bands started at a club gig? People talk to each other, you know? It's just, like Steve says, the scene was just inviting.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring it down for the next couple of questions, and then we'll have, I guess, happier questions at the end. But both Steve and Mike have been in bands where people have passed away or there's been infighting. Or toxicity. Steve and I talked a little bit about this before the show started. Both Steve and Mike have been in bands that have an edge and a danger to them. Is the self-destructive and the nihilism and the poor communication, is that part of the magic? Or would you know, bands that have had problems between members and with self-destruction, is that really just getting in the way of the music? I guess to restate that. The negative aspects of being in a powerful band like Flipper, where people have passed away and have issues, or the Stooges, where people have had issues, is that part of the magic, or does that get in the way?
Both, I would say. Mike, what do you say?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about human beings, so it gets complicated. You know, it's interesting about that. And it'll break your heart. It'll break your heart. But what do we do? You got to keep pushing.
Yeah. I've always been one to run from, well, drama is another word, right? Yeah. I've had members in my band that, you know, one guy in particular, you know, he can't live without drama. Some people can't live without drama. And if there is none, they create it. So drama, you know, infighting, you know, controversy, all these conflict, all this different stuff. Some people are entertained by it. They, you know, they entertain themselves by creating this type of drama and whatnot. And then there's the drugs and all that stuff too that's involved. And drugs make people fucking crazy and stuff too. Yeah. So. But it is all part of rock and roll, and, you know, it's part of the magic, and it's part of the fucking problem. So, you know, it's especially a problem for people who don't want to be around drama. I was never one that really wanted to be around drama, but it was part of life, and there was nothing I could do about it. I tried to minimize and eliminate the drama, but it wouldn't go away. So it was just had to be contended with, you know, minute by minute, moment by moment, day by day. You know, we had to just deal with it.
Yeah. You're right. It all goes together to make the band and stuff. But I go play with Steve, Ted. To me, it's the most beautiful opportunity. So I am so glad they survived that stuff. And in my case, I've been lucky that way. By the time I was helping the Stooges, they got over all that stuff. The people have died. Yeah, human. Yeah. You know, it's a human thing. It's a human thing. I'm not going to try to say I'm much better or stuff, but.
You know what else, Mike? These issues and problems, while they're not maybe exclusive to the creative community, I find that a lot of very creative people are very, like, what's the word? They're very self-destructive and tormented by various things. I mean, maybe some of the very, very things that make them so creative also torment them. So, you know, when they discover heroin, for example, heroin takes all that away. You know, it's just all that torment and pain and suffering and all that, it just goes away. So they fall in love with this drug, heroin, right?